Welcome to the Stewards of Stoke podcast, an adventure podcast that gets you stoked for the outdoors through stories, interviews with athletes, and industry professionals. Sit back, grab a hazy, and join Matt and Braven for this episode of Stewards of Stoke.
Welcome to the Stewards of Stoke podcast. I am your host, Matt.
And Braven Levine here.
What is going on, my dude?
Oh, man, just wrapped up a day of work here over the weekend, doing a lot of biking. Actually got to bike with a special guest. It was our principal, actually, so it was really neat. Got to go out with our principal over at AIM and get a little cruise in.
Nice.
It was a really good time, and I was really surprised to see how he was pushing me. So
yeah.
We were kind of pushing each other a little bit and getting after it. And
nice.
Hitting a couple little jumps, nothing too crazy, but
cool.
Just having some fun. How about you?
Yeah, just working and, yeah. Dad life and all the things.
Dad life. We're both expecting some kiddos pretty soon here. I've got one coming in December, and Matt's got one coming here in October, and so.
Yep, and I have a now 2-year-old as well. So, yep, he's already a mini shredder though. So, but yeah. So, today's episode, I am beyond excited for this one, and have been pestering for. Since we started, I think we have Mr. Dan Abrams, the co-founder and president of Flylo. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I have mentioned before, Braven and I, for those of you listening, Braven and I are pretty big Flylo whores, as I like to say it. Pretty much if we're out either snowboarding or mountain biking, there's 99% chance that we have some type of Flylo gear on.
You just haven't come out with Flylo underwear yet, so we're waiting on that one.
It's true. Just Flylo long underwear.
That's true.
The Flylo short underwear.
Some base
layers. We haven't gone there yet.
Hey, I'm ready for that elastic Flylo band. Dan has been definitely one of the people that we've first idea when we were thinking of people to get on the podcast, just because, like I said, we're big Flylo fans. It's a Colorado brand. So for you guys, it's been 20 years. So congrats on 20 years epicness.
Thanks for being part of the Flylo community. It's
absolutely
what started as like a reflection of my group of friends from college has turned into something so much bigger than all of us. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And
across the world too. It's not just Colorado.
Exactly.
For sure. So it's definitely something that is pretty cool. So do you want to start by kind of telling us about Dan the man himself?
Oh man. Well, I never call myself Dan the man. I 20 years. It's crazy to be at 20 years, but you know, like really for me, the ideas and the, you know, like what shaped Flylo is kind of, you know, like been going for 30, 40 years. I started skiing when I was 2, and you know, like the people that I looked up to when it came to lifestyle were like coaches, were skiers, they were guitar players, they were fun people to hang out with, and their style became my style. And eventually it was like in the 90s I came up with the name when I was at college, because it would have been a bad band name, and I played music. And so, but I was like, but that would look good on a t-shirt, and it does. I mean, so I mashed up the words, bought the URL, and then a few years later we started going and making it happen. And it's I've been pretty much in a pinch me state since like 2010 when I quit bartending and didn't have to get another restaurant job.
There you go. One thing, so for those of you guys that are tuning in, shout out to Drew Simmons, by the way, of Pale Morning Media for setting all this up and responding to my billion emails and whatnot over the last couple of days. But he sent us this book called Homegrown. It's called Homegrown, Celebrating Fly Low's Independent Culture and Grassroots Vibe since 2005. And one of the funny things, I thought you kind of mentioned it just a second ago, is how you guys came up with the name. She's Australian, or
French. I mean, it's been so long, it's like just a joke and laughable how debated it is. But my recollection, skiing in Jackson Hole in the late 90s, I'm a junior or a senior in college, and with all my buddies, and you know, a lot of my buddies, we all moved to Washington to go to college because we were looking for the Cascades. The mountains were something different. We had guys from Michigan and a lot of us from Colorado and Wyoming. And we skied at Crystal Mountain. But we would road trip, as college kids do, and figure out a way to get to different places. So we're at Jackson, we're skiing, and a lot of my buddies switched over to Telemark because it was rad at the time. It was a great way to, it's still there. It's a great way to move around in the backcountry back then, especially before the Duke binding and Tech bindings and all that stuff. But the thing about telemarking is that it's hard, right? And my friends were athletes and they could do it really well. But I never really fell in love with it. And I was alpining, but at that point in time, I would just let them go first and then they'd take a break in the middle. And then I'd ski down and go all the way down to the ski lift. And our friend Justin from college had brought his new girlfriend along, and she was French, and she had stopped in the middle, and I just arced super G turns through, you know, beautiful Wyoming crud. So light, it's almost like better than POW sometimes. And get to the ski lift, we're bullshitting. I remember sitting, leaning on my poles as I do, and the girl comes up to me and she's like, "Dan, when you ski, you don't ski fast, you fly low." And it sounded so good in her accent and the way she said it. And I would just, and I instantly was just like, "Fly low." And like, I'm not very good at writing and reading. So to me, I just saw fly low, two words, and I kind of mashed it up. And I decided this would be a cool name. It wouldn't be good for our band, but it would be good for a clothing company. And we had already been kicking the tires about like how we could merge snowboard cool with ski, you know, functionality with mountaineering quality. And so that idea, that mashup, just got the name Fly Low. And thank you, unnamed woman. And to my buddies, Ethan and Greg being my co-founder, and Ethan, just another shit talker, good best friend of mine from college. They both think that she was talking about them. And, you know, and at this point, I don't know anymore, guys.
Yeah, it's some of the, I'm gonna have to find that page because some of the quotes in here are pretty funny.
I just love that it's the typical story that, you know, fly low is forever and girls are temporary. You know, the name stuck around. She did not,
or did she?
I don't know. Maybe Jensen's still married to her. She was a ripping skier, and she gave us the name of our company. So if you're out there,
look for the French out. Girl. Absolutely. Yeah. So you kind of touched. You know, you said you came up
your
with your
incident
when,
has been
the
updated
design when you were in college. And so I'm curious, was your degree that you were pursuing at the time anything related to the outdoor industry or marketing or anything like that? Or was this just kind of a passion project that popped up on the side?
Well, I came up like we came up with design concepts, not exactly designs. And, you know, it really was a reflection of like what my group of friends was looking for, because we were skiing Crystal Mountain. We were climbing and we were boot packing up the Silver King with ski boots and skis on, and it was a hot, sweaty endeavor and so forth. So, but along the way, my degree was actually in international political economics. And yep, which I think Mel Brooks would say that I'm a bullshitter. And He's probably right. My so my buddy Greg, co-founder, he studied the same thing. And IPE is like a subset of international relations. But at our school, we had these amazing professors that cover this subject. And basically, we looked at the way the world worked, you know, macroeconomics, microeconomics, the way the climate affects economics, sociology, history, language. It was the way the world works. And I had even, you know, grown up watching Star Trek as a as a kid, The Next Generation. And when you go back and you look at that stuff, it's galactic political economics. And when you think about business and the way the world works, you know, and in particular, the way the world works right now with tariffs and duties and shipping and logistics and, you know, posturing, like, it actually turned out to be a pretty useful degree for Greg and I both, because, you know, along the way we've found factories, we've figured out how to make the best product we can while doing the least harm. And we have amazing factory partners, you know, all around the world. So
okay.
it's been a hell of a ride.
That was actually going to be my next question, is like, how have you been able to translate that into the fly low world?
Well, I think like the whole logistics and like supply, demand, buy the right amount, you know, but also it's, you know, generating that demand. Like we didn't, I think we were more students of marketing and, you know, we were also young and ignorant. I think people are entrepreneurial when they're either comfortable, if they ever get there and they can become entrepreneurial, or you do it when you're young and dumb. And I think you put us into the latter grouping. You know, it's just ignorance was bliss. I had nothing to lose. Greg and I both were, you know, in our mid-20s. We were good in the service industry. Greg could sell beautiful bottles of wine and fine food. And I was more of a chop shop bartender at the Wash Park Grill, the now deceased Wash Park Grill in South Denver, serving drinks to DU kids. And, you know, like we made good livings and we were willing to start this company and make no money. And for, you know, like the first 6-7 years,
yeah,
we just invested our money and kept it going. And, you know, there were perks of, you know, ski gear, ski trips, you know, the ski industry is a blast. So,
yeah, that's really cool. How long were you like bartending from kind of when you got your first bartending job to where you were able to, you said you left and went full time with Fly Low in 2010.
August 27th, 2010 is when I quit bartending, and I stripped down to my skivvies and threw all my clothes in the garbage can at the Wash Park Grill and was just like committed.
Yeah.
To
you're like,
to
now forward. I can't come back.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have any more black shoes.
Burn the bridge.
I used to wear like these New Balance like postal worker shoes. I used to know the number too. Anyway, so that was probably nine years.
Yeah.
9.5 years, because we graduated college in 2000, moved to Jackson, Wyoming. Blew my knee out, wound up moving back to Denver because my roommates weren't going to take care of me. And so I went back and my mom welcomed me in with open arms. And my mom and I are good friends. And as you can see in our book, she likes to talk smack about me too. But yeah, so it's a family business, from like being in my mom's garage to being in my garage to, you know, now I'm in my family house out here in Tahoe. That's waiting amazing. For the kids to barge through the door.
Yeah.
Love that. Do they have any interest in being in the company? Are they active in the company at all right now?
Actually, they really were an important part of designing our kids line. We make some, I became a connoisseur of kids' clothes and I'm a product person. I mean, that's kind of, you know, you take the econ degree, but then it's just like that focus, hyper focus on being, you know, trying to figure out how to make a better rat trap, if you will. And so the kids, when we got to the point where we thought that we could handle a kid's collection, yeah. I had been buying stuff for the kids and watching how they used it, watching how they destroyed it. And then, you know, they would get in samples and they'd be wearing them around, which was great. And when we finally got something that looked correct, salesman samples, they started doing, they did a video shoot and a photo shoot. I paid them $25 each. It was so funny what they spent.
Probably the cheapest models that you've been able to hire along the way.
Oh my God.
That's awesome.
It was great. Yeah. It was great. And then, and there's an awesome kids apparel video and like they're skiing so well in it. So yeah. I'm glad you have a little ripper.
Oh yeah.
Put the time in. It pays off in spades. Now mine are 9 and 11, but as of last year when they were 8 and 10, like, my kids rip. I can go anywhere with them. Okay. And actually, my last trip to Jackson, it was just Nora, my daughter, and I. And we went to Jackson. The Jackson Hole Ski Patrol said I had done a deal for pro deal with them. And they were like, if you're ever in town, come along and we'll take you on the early tram. And I was like, well, I'm going there in 7 days with my 10-year-old. Don't worry, she rips. And Nora and I were on the 7:30 Jackson Hole tram with all Ski Patrol, surrounded by dynamite.
Hell yeah.
12 inches of pow. It was a riot.
Heck yeah.
It was a riot.
Are they both skiers?
They are both skiers.
Yeah.
We are open to snowboarding. We're involved in ski racing at Alpine Meadows, California.
Nice.
And but you know, obviously free ride is, you know, like, is a hot topic right now for, you know, fly low athletes. I mean, we have some ex racers. We have Darren Ralves that rides for us. But even he's hunting pow now. So
nice.
So we'll see what happens. And if they snowboard, that's great. As long as they're having fun, that's all that matters, you know?
Heck yeah. Yeah, I got my little dude on a Strider probably, what, like 9 months?
Yeah, pretty early.
Like,
nice.
About 9 months, like down in the basement and whatnot, and so that there was, you know, enough padding to where if he fell, like, he was still good and would still want to do it. And like now he's 2 and the dude is like, he'll hit all the rock gardens in the neighborhood and...
And you got that kids ride shotgun on your bike.
Yeah, I got the kids ride shotgun seat on my bike, and we rip on that. Go get food, go on the trails.
They just want to be with us and do what we do.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's gonna be a menace on the trail.
Get him some fly low gear.
Well, you got to bring him on the podcast. I mean, that's the thing. It's like sometimes the kids barge in, and if they barge in when I'm on a call. Doesn't matter if I'm with a bank or whatever. I'm just like, you have to now come in and say hello.
I like it. That's awesome.
This is great. Or other times when I'm like, I'm not the designer, but when I mess with designs, sometimes, especially Nora will come in and she'll get on my Adobe Illustrator and she'll click around and she'll color up her favorite kit or whatever she needs it to be. So
that's hilarious. That is so that's cool. Really cool too.
Well, I appreciate you teaching the social skills. My day trade, you know, is a speech therapist. And so the social pragmatic skills are very key. So
okay, perfect.
Kudos to you, man.
I was going
to
say you would, you'll love
got
that
pretty
for sure.
Excited over that one.
Yeah. real quick, back to the French girl that gave you your name. Nothing for the company.
Yeah. French girl, man.
Well, right here it says you say French girl, and then what you had mentioned earlier, and then how you think it would look good on a t-shirt, and then out of like the way it's broken down is it has like 1999, and then like your different friends' names and your name, like. Trying to rethink of that conversation, but my favorite one is Greg Steen's response. There are only two things I'm positive about. I was there, and it was Crystal Mountain.
exactly. Like, so it's debate.
It's
a fever.
It's
dream.
The I'm not going to pick sides response, but yes. I just remember being there.
He's
Greg's,
a smart man.
Greg's, you know, like co-founder, business partner, college buddy. We've figured out, you know, like how to navigate a lot of things and when to, you know, like when to let something go and agree to disagree.
Oh yeah.
And that's how you keep a friendship through a business, you know, like through starting a business, through a group, college group of friends. It's that's part of it. Tons of respect.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
So another thing that I saw was your kind of approach with grassroots of, you know, you're going to let this thing organically spread on its own. So how do you, and you started out with stickers, correct?
stickers, t-shirts, so stuff like that, stuff to give away.
Yeah, so how'd you start disseminating this stuff and getting people to want to wear it, you know? Obviously, it starts with that friend group. You know, you're in a ski group with people, and you know, you're heading to the local hill. And so how are you getting people to start wearing this and then to progress from that to selling it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of made it sound like a grassroots organic, you know, like method was planned. Greg would always like to say that we've Forrest Gumped our way through this, as in to say, like, we've had a lot of fortunate things happen, timing, you know, but, you know, all along we were like Forrest, we were actually good at what we did, and we were, you know, like, and we were genuine. So when I first started, I would make t-shirts and hats, and I would stuff a couple in my ski jacket, which were those Fly Low jackets, the original Quantums, mm-hmm. that had the big stuff sacks on the inside. And I'd go up to, you know, namely girls that were telemarking, and I'd give them shirts that said, Telly Girls Get Down. And they were pretty fun, you know, and times have changed, but that was like 2005, 2006. And, you know, I gave out hats and stickers. But then the key to it were a couple movie companies. One was called Tough Guy Productions, Nat Ross and Stefan Renaudois, or Renaudindu. It's French, and Frenchy is what he goes by, another French person. And go. Then there was from Tough Guy Productions, there was another movie company called The Powder Horse. Mm-hmm. And Powder Horse Productions were the Howell brothers out of Salt Lake City. Well, Tough Guy Productions did, actually to date, the only consumer-facing ski demo that was open to the public in the fall. It was amazing. Late November through late December, Tough Guy Productions would go around showing their movie for the year, which was a telly movie always, and then they'd get all the backcountry reps, and backcountry reps and reps is like a whole nother chapter in the book of the outdoor industry, but backcountry reps are super hungry, and they're not afraid to sleep in their car and sleep in their van and go on the road and do something like that. You know, alpine ski reps, snowboard reps, they're doing so much volume and business that they probably can't even handle it. So I'm not knocking either. But at the time, in the mid 2000s, these backcountry reps would go with Tough Guy Productions, and we would do 6 or 7 on snow demos throughout the Rockies.
Nice.
It was amazing. So I'd be the guy that showed up, and I'd be in like the Dillon Brewery in the corner on the stairs with a mannequin and, you know, and banners and stickers. And, you know, people are like, what the hell is this? You know, like, but I was there doing it. And then I talked to people on the ski hill. And then I met this guy, Edmund Mond, who was a quote unquote pro telemark skier that then became a pretty legit telemark skier. Now he runs the Loveland Freeride program. But Eben started going out there and doing these things with me as well, and would go set up. And that's actually how I met my wife. She met Eben at a tele demo down in Taos, New Mexico. And he got interested in the brand. And then I met her when I saw her email address at outsidemagazine.com.
Oh, yeah.
Because her PR was really hard to come.
Yeah.
And then I got to give, you know, major, you know, like props to the Powder Horse, to Jonah Noah Howell, because those guys would make a telemark and eventually just an AT backcountry ski film. But they made 10 of them, and they went on tour for 10 years, and they would go on tour for 2.5-3 months and do 60, 70 stops throughout the American West.
Wow.
Damn.
And I would go with them for like maybe 20 stops.
Yeah.
These guys, they're taller than me. So I'd be sitting in like the back of that cramped extended cab on the Tacoma. And we had some amazing
times. They the sideways seats? Or they
exactly.
Were
exactly.
Yeah.
I was sideways Dan in the back.
Shoving all the merch in there.
So yeah. you were sideways Dan, not Dan the man.
That's right.
Okay, I'll make sure sideways I never call Dan. You that again.
Thanks. You call me whatever you want. But yeah, and so that was grassroots marketing 101. Like, get out there in the fall in the Rockies. I think living in Denver, Colorado at that time, was so important, having the front range, the diehard front range skiers and ski community. You know, today that's still probably our number one home base. But as you can tell, like, we started the company kind of with ideas up in Washington and Crystal Mountain. So that's kind of where we think we're from. We lived in Jackson after college, Greg and I and our whole group of friends from college. So Jackson's a hometown. Colorado's a hometown. And now I live in Tahoe for 13 years. And, you know, who'd have thought that California has the most skiers per capita of any state in the country?
Well, you guys just got dumped on, 2 years ago? A couple, 13, 14 feet of snow or something crazy?
You know, we don't need to talk about it. You guys stay in Colorado. Utah's the best. And I hear Big Sky is just going off right now. You know, Tahoe, I love Tahoe. My wife is from here, so she brought me here. And I love my Maritime snowpack. I love the density of the snow that with 4 inches, I'm surfing. I don't touch bottom. Whereas, like, I remember skiing Aspen Highlands Bowl, untracked 8 inches, just the worst 8 inches of my life, riding on ice underneath. But yeah, I'm going skiing no matter what. I love it. I love Colorado. People are always like, how can you ski out there? Like, Colorado's the best. It's like, it's all good, man. JP got more snow than Tahoe last year, for the record, 475 inches. So why don't you guys go check out Northern Vermont for once?
All right. Some East Coast skiing.
That's what I grew up on. I'm originally from New York, so.
Right on.
Yeah, so I grew up like Holiday Valley. My like super local mountain was Bristol Mountain. It was literally like as high as a football field, I think.
And, you know, part of like what makes a good ski experience is like the ski hill, the town, and when I think of Holiday Valley, I think about Ellicottville, New York.
Oh yeah.
And the City Garage, which is like this rad ski shop. Trey and Sean, and those guys have been,
yeah.
I mean, that's what really the grassroots marketing of Flylo was, when we started to open up the best, you know, fleet arsenal of independent retailers, you know, like in the world.
Okay. So, is that like right on Main Street? Like right on Main Street there?
That's my understanding. I've only met those guys in trade shows.
But yeah,
I haven't been there.
I haven't been back there since like high school. But I remember, I remember breaking my binding, and just trying to find a ski shop. If it's the one I'm thinking of on Main Street, pretty sure that's where I had to go into. But yeah, so Holiday Valley, and then like our high school trip every year was Killington.
Nice.
And then hitting like Stowe. I grew up on Northeast snow. So, I mean,
and I'm originally from Boston, and I, you know, like don't spend much time back there in the winter. Never really have, but for some reason, the Flylo brand and the Flylo ethos resonates with New England skiers.
Oh yeah.
And it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, just being able to ski some tall grass / snow mixture. Like, I don't know that if you don't start on that, then like you're going to take it all the snow out here for granted for sure.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that's why I'm good with Colorado snow, because I grew up on East Coast ice, as I like to say it.
Well, I started on trash dumps in Michigan, basically. Oh, yeah. So it was really rough in southern Michigan, where there's hardly any snow and it's all man-made. And, you know, it's night skiing, too, so it's really icy and just gross. I mean, but you got to cut your teeth somewhere, and it really makes you appreciate the honey holes that much more, for sure.
That's true. Now our kids are all going to abandon these mountain places and go live in the city, and it's just a reaction to us.
Exactly.
That's why we got to keep them on the mountain so they don't want to.
For sure.
That's true.
So one of the cool things from just the Flylo story in general is the amount of the first jackets and snow pants that you guys that you kind of maxed out a credit card on and filled your garage with. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah. So it was a different time. Like, I'm 47, and in 2004, you could, I actually bought a house. I had declared $18,000 in earnings that year as a bartender, and they gave me a mortgage to buy a house in South Denver. And that is called a subprime mortgage, my friends. And it worked out for the bank. It worked out for me. But, you know, that's just a sign of the times. And back then, I had this crazy idea. I was hacking my way through finding out how to make a sample and getting a sample made, finding factories. A good friend of ours from high school and college, Jared Hankins, he like hand drew the first like logos and jackets. But then it was actually advice from his mother that, you know, that got me going, because she introduced us to Alibaba.com, which is an international sourcing site. And I don't use that anymore. And I should have invested all my money from bartending in that. But that wouldn't have been fun. Then I'd just be rich. I'd have no philo.
True.
So so instead, you know, like, you know, we hack our way through it. I finally get to the point where I have an order coming around and I need 60 grand. And back then, credit cards would literally, you could call them up, get $60,000 lines of credit. They would give you convenience checks where you could write a convenience check to yourself or to another bank account, and they would give you that $60,000. And the interest rates were 0% for 9 months or 2.9% for the life of the loan. And the best part, and the difference between the fine print now and then, is that it would say there would be a 3% transaction fee with a maximum fee of $175.
Oh, jeez.
Nowadays, you'll pay 3%, and it's the full 3% up front. So I had two United Chase Manhattan credit cards, and I still have them. And I would bounce the debt back and forth. And in the wintertime, we would pay it all off. And in the summertime, sometimes Greg and I had to split the credit card bill and make the minimum payments from bartending to get through the summer months. And eventually, we would be able to pay it off. And come February, it would be time to place deposits for the following year's gear. And we would have a conversation like, well, do we take all the money that we have in the bank? We've paid off our debt. We're debt free. We built our resume. Maybe we could, you know, like maybe I could go work for Patagonia or something. And, you know, like Greg had become this amazing designer and so forth. And then we'd be like, ah, fuck it. Let's go in again. And you throw it all in again and you let it ride. Just hoping that, you know, in 9-10 months, you'd be able to pay off that credit card. Yeah. So it was very, you know, it was a crazy thing to do. I sat back and I thought to myself, we would also borrow money from friends and family that we would call friends and family loans, very original. And they would be like 10% or 6% loans for the, you know, for a year. And at that time, like that was really good interest rates to get a 6 or 10% interest rate, depending on how much they loaned us. And we would pay them back every year. And I would struggle with it. I was definitely the one that would go out and raise the money. And sometimes I'd say to Greg, like, oh, I don't want to do this. And he's like, dude, where else do our friends get an opportunity to make 10%? So he talked me up, and then I'd go out and I'd raise us money. But in the back of my mind, I always thought, like, if this thing goes south, if the ship sinks literally and I'm out, I got to bartend for 5 years to pay everybody off. And that's what I was committed to do. I'm not going to jail because I made a bad business decision or because there was, you know, like an act of the supernatural that took down the ship coming from Hong Kong. So that's good.
Yeah.
But I may have to work for 5 years in this bar, which, you know, wasn't that bad. And it never came to that, fortunately.
Did you have any people that tried to talk you off the ledge, you know, because it sounds like you're the guy that's like all chips in, you know? Was your mom kind of hounding on you like, what are you doing, man? Like, go get a normal job. Just work like everybody else, you know, stick with bartending, whatever it is. There's got to be somebody. I was like, this isn't going to work out for you. You're in over your head. And if you don't want to call them out, that's fine. I totally understand.
No. I mean, there was my father who, you know, like I, at one point I need a little more than the 120 that Chase gave me. And so my dad loaned me 20 grand and he said under his breath, I shit you not. He said, here's a lesson in squandering $20,000. And I paid him back in 3 years with interest, 6% interest compounded. And he was just like jaw dropped and was like, where do I loan more? And so I had him on the hook for years loaning me money.
I was going to say, paying him interest. You gave him that last check to pay off that first loan. And he was just like, all right, okay.
Little did the pyramid scheme was set.
I think it just kind of puts a fire under your ass, man. You got all these people telling you no.
Yeah, it did for sure. I mean, you know, like he challenged me whether he knew it or not. And mm-hmm. I told him that story over and over again. And it did light a fire in my ass. There was another good friend of ours, Jeff Carson, we'll call out. So Jeff is kind of 5 years older than us, but waited tables with Greg up in Jackson. And then became, you know, part of our group of friends from college. And he was in business school while I was starting Flylo down at DU. And he would be my roommate. He was my mom's roommate, dog sitter. he became part of the family. And he did a whole, you know, like term paper on Flylo as a business. And in the end, you know, he determined that it was never going to do anything more than be like a small mom and pop business that was a lifestyle business and that, you know, I needed to be careful and so forth. And so that was really good. That was pretty good. But, you know, all in all, if anybody was warning me I wasn't listening, you know, like I think there's a quote in that book from my mom where she says something to the extent of, you know, Dan's super focused and I didn't really know what he was doing, but he was paying his bills and, you know, like
there's nobody knocking on the door.
The governor. Yeah.
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 That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So like early days, I think it was what, 1,000 jackets and 500 pants.
Yeah. Yeah. The first round of jackets from Taiwan, were 1,000 jackets, and I didn't know anything about production. So I didn't know that I could split them into different colors. I didn't know that I could order less and pay a surcharge. So I bought 1,000 jackets. It took about 3 years to move through them. And then the pants I got from New Zealand. So that one, it was easier to communicate with that factory. Yeah. I got them. I did a collab with a brand called Cactus Climbing, which is still in business, and they make some really cool stuff. Kind of classic Kiwi style, you know, overly tough, you know, dare I say, not like rudimentary, but just like erring on the side of like basic stitching and so forth. And they made us their Dreadnought HD pant. And they co-branded it with us. They put a powder gator in it for us, and that's it. And then our logo and their logo, and they asked if I wanted to take their logo off, but you know, I wanted the legitimacy of Cactus Climbing. If anybody mm-hmm. was going to look and see that, you know, like who was making our stuff, that they were legit. Mm-hmm. These pants were so burly. They were like 16 ounce army duck canvas, and they were stitched with a horse saddle sewing machine because it was the only thing that could puncture through like four layers of this fabric. And yeah, it was crazy. When you pulled them out of the bag, you could puff up the legs and they would just stand on their own. But eventually they broke in and they would just, you know, like they became a part of you.
Oh, yeah. Weren't they like,
they lasted forever.
Weren't they like three sizes too big?
They were on the, that was the second pair.
Oh, the second, okay.
These ones were too small because they were for a Kiwi. So I would wear an XL, even though I'm like on the small size of a large, like a 34 inch waist, 36 inch waist. So yeah, you'd have to size up in those. And then the next pair, the factory graded the waist wrong and they made it so that the large had a 40 inch waist. So I made the factory add a belt to every pair of pants.
Ah, that's where the belt comes in.
Yeah.
That's where the belt comes in with the bottle opener on it. So you could actually, and I still do this because like I said, like, well, and also like if you buy a pair of pants, like I buy a pair of pants so that I can layer with it. And mm-hmm. then come springtime, when you're wearing a t-shirt, you know, those things, those pants need a belt. Mm-hmm. And so the nice thing about the bottle opener is that you can put the shank button that you use to close your pant, you can hang it in the bottle opener. And it just, everything is tight, dialed, perfect.
That's pretty neat. So when you're designing all these, you go from the stickers, the t-shirts, and now you're like, okay, now we're going to do some pants, we're going to do some jackets. What were you looking to change about the previous designs? You know, I don't know what you're wearing previous to this, but I know that you're wanting something a little more rugged. So what separates Flylo from what was already out on the market then?
Cool. So back then, snowboard pants were cool. They were on the loose side of things, and they weren't very technical. Skiing was all driven by ski racing. This idea of free ride, backcountry didn't exist. And then there was mountaineering gear. And so my ski coach, Dave, who's like the godfather of Flylo, because I picked up a lot of stuff from him, he was like, oh, you got to check out these brands like the North Face and Patagonia. Like, this was like, that was like new hip shit. In, you know, like 1990. And, you know, like at that time, you know, fast forward 10 years after that, now in the late 90s, if you wanted a three-layer seam tape garment, you were buying a mountaineering piece. Okay. Because there was no three-layer seam tape ski pieces or snowboard pieces. Burton AK did not exist. Mm-hmm. So we go out into the world wearing, you know, mountaineering gear, starting to get more and more mountaineering gear, because skiing at Crystal Mountain, bootpacking, wet snow, you know, like the first day skiing in college, I was wearing a pair of J. Crew cotton one piece like union suit that was all red. It became like it became the drunk Santa, you know, Halloween costume eventually.
Or Marlboro Man of the Mountain.
That was pretty good. Yes, Marlboro Man, that would have worked. After that first day where I only lasted a couple hours because I got so cold, I just didn't know how to dress for like actual weather. Because Colorado's easy. It's dry. Mm-hmm. And we weren't, you know, I was in high school, so I wasn't like climbing mountains. I didn't know anything about avalanche control or avalanches at all. And I'm lucky I lived through my senior year, because we started hitchhiking and skiing Berthoud Pass when I was a senior in high school. And we were all about don't fall in tree wells, let's ski as partners. We tried to be responsible, but we didn't know what we were doing. It was 1995 and we were kids. So eventually we start tapping into three-layer fabric, and my first pair and last pair of Patagonia bibs, and no knocking on Patagonia, I love them. I love, you know, my friends that work there, and for so many different reasons. However, at the time, they were making the Ice 9 bib, and it was a Gore-Tex bib, and I had to stretch it to fit over my leggings. And what that meant was that anytime my ski edge touched my pant, even though there was a scuff guard, gone. Yeah. You just start poking holes in it. And then for all the telly dudes, and that was the other thing about designing clothes. Like, when you think about, you know, the telly turn and how much movement goes into it, and then the increased amount of physical exertion just going down, let alone the boot pack we were all doing going up, you know, like, I was like, okay, we need a free ride fit. So something that fits more like, you know, a snowboard pant mixed with a ski pant, but we need it built like a mountaineering pant. And so that was the mission, was how do I find a factory that made mountaineering gear to make my ski pant that was as cool as a snowboard pant, which is now a ski snowboard pant. And it was hard. And eventually I found this company out of Taiwan called David Resource, and they were making mountain hardware jackets and Orvis fly fishing waders. And that satiated a couple things for me. One, you know, didn't really think about three layer or five layer fabric for fishing waders, but it's the same thing. So they could seam tape. So that was great. And also, these were legitimate American companies that I knew couldn't afford to violate international labor laws. So I knew that I could actually make products at a good factory without having them care about us, because they don't care about us. You know, now they do. But back then we were just a pipsqueak trying to convince a factory to make us a sample because we were going to be the next big thing. It was just total bullshit.
That's interesting. I never thought about having to even convince the factory, let alone selling the product itself. That's incredible.
Well, the hardest people. So first you have to sell the factory, then you got to take the product and you got to sell the community, and then you got to sell the store owner who's going to pressure the store buyer. But you got to be careful, because I pissed off some store buyers and it kept me out of regions for years, like really? A decade, because I pissed off the buyer.
Oh shit.
Can you elaborate on that? I'm curious what the story behind that is.
You know,
if you don't, if you want to,
I'm not getting too deep into it. But you know, like there was, you know, like going in and, you know, store owners are idealists and business owners, and, you know, like they get excited about stuff, you know? And so I was able to, you know, communicate with them, and, you know, like, and sometimes a store owner will go over the head of their buyer and get them to, you know, be like, you got to carry this brand. And then the buyer comes into the store and is like, what the hell is this? You know, it doesn't, you know, like a good store buyer, you know, they think about things from, like, you know, it actually starts with color. And they're like, I'm getting my greens from Arc'teryx. I get my navy from Flylo. I get my red from this brand and that. And that's how they piece it together. And then price and technical aspects and functionality come secondary to that. So if you're a store buyer and you walk into a store that you've been merchandising for years, and all of a sudden there is a homemade clothing rack sitting on the floor of the store and you didn't approve it, and your boss, you know, the owner of the shop is like, oh yeah, I did that. Like, you're going to be pissed at him or her, and you're going to be pissed at the brand. Yeah. And so, that
makes sense.
It happened there.
Yeah.
So it took convincing for everybody other than the credit card companies.
Yeah. Credit card companies gave me money, and actually the hardest people to sell are sales reps. Because those guys and gals need to know that they can sell enough, that they're going to make enough commission that it's worth them, you know, initially pioneering the brand, really, which is a ton of work. Now, you know, like when we change reps, we're just laughing, because, you know, like we have a strong brand, that, you know, like that reps want to sell, and it's, you know, it's a huge relief.
The easy part's now. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally. I wouldn't say easy.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean,
that's
fair. Just open
the,
up your
the payoff. The payoff part is now.
The payoff part is now.
For sure.
The brand speaks for itself.
I get to focus more on zipper colors and, you know, technical aspects, and you know, and now that we have a Gore-Tex license, I get to focus and play with Gore-Tex and, you know, all the new technology that's coming out, which is super fun.
Like, yeah. That kind of leads us to the next part too. Like, how involved are you, like, in product design and all that? Obviously, you said you're playing with Gore-Tex now, and, like, obviously
I'm more
you've
involved
grown
than the production department wants me to be.
Yeah.
No, we have an amazing senior director of product, Chris Bloom, and Greg decided to change things up in his life in 2020. So after 12 years, he stepped back from working at Flylo, is still the second largest shareholder in the company. And then one of our, you know, like Greg and I would basically hire like big brother, big sister types that were like very experienced people that didn't want to, you know, like that needed to work remote. And this was before working remote and shelter in place was a thing. And so our sales manager to the stars, Micah Hinton, he had been working with us for a while. Greg stepped back, and Micah and I went on the search to find a new product director, and Chris came along. So Chris now is running the product. We have six people on that team. And yeah, when it, you know, like Chris runs the show, and when it's time, when they have their ducks in a row to a point where he thinks it's time for me to come in and weigh in, which starts with a line list, an Excel document where we go through and we're just looking at each style in order, deciding, okay, first of all, like, we're going into 2027 is what we're designing on Thursday, or we're having like our fifth meeting on 2027, spring 27. And we'll go in and we're going to look at our line list. We're going to look at sales data from what's sold in for spring 25 now and spring 26, because we already have our store orders for spring 26. And we'll make sure that we've made the right decision. You know, like in summertime, we sell these, you know, the two best products we sell are the, or the two top selling products, I should say, are the Anderson shirt and the hot tub short. And you're wearing an Anderson shirt right now. So it's like, obviously, we're not going to fuck with your Anderson shirt.
Please,
we're
don't.
Not going to mess with yeah. it. We don't, you know, we're just going to give you new colors, you know, like, and micro tweaks. We think about design in that instance, like an F-150, you know, micro tweaks every so often, or the Levi's 501. But we never declare like, we changed your shirt. Right. Hopefully you don't even notice, or and so forth. But then there's other products where, you know, where you're doing a loss leader, where, you know, maybe, you know, like you decide to do a fleece robe like we did last year. And the Wolfie robe, you know, like, it's a bad example because it actually slays it and it's going into production. but sometimes, like, we did this amazing trail running collection only to realize that the wholesalers couldn't support it because the wholesalers, you know, they only get a discount on their running shoes if they buy the trail running stuff from the running shoe company. And we can't sell enough of these trail running shorts on our website to justify 500 units or 1,000 gotcha. Units. And so trail run short gone. What are we going to put in there next? You know, like, what do we do well? So I get involved, you know, as granular as that, right into weighing in on color and fit and design. And I just love it. I mean, that's what I got into the business for, is product. And, you know, everybody wants to be the product tester for a company like ours, but that's my job. And so I,
you're not taking it from me.
You're not taking it from, I want your opinion. So give me your opinion.
Yeah.
But only I get paid to be the product tester. And, you know, of course, Chris and the rest of the folks on our team are, you know, we have some of the, you know, like some of the finest split board and mountain bikers that I know work at our Denver facility doing all of our operations. So we get to span all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
That is wicked cool. I love that. So what's if you can give us a little hint of what's next? You know, you talked about the running shorts being in there. This is that kind of new pop-up thing. What are you working on now, if you're allowed to share?
Well,
he's looking at his board.
No.
I'm okay.
I'm looking at Blake. My wife turned my desk around, so now I look off into like.
Gotcha. I figured you were looking at like a whiteboard of like future stuff. No, you're like, do I want to talk about that? Who am I going to get yelled at?
Different seasons in my head. Yeah. And so now I'm going to rein it back into fall 2025.
Okay.
And, you know, like. And what I'm most excited about is that that Gore-Tex was forced and did a great job innovating and coming up with their first new membrane in 40, 50 years. And that, you know, like that Flylo is helping them, you know, get that technology out to the people, because it's lighter than the old Gore. It's just as waterproof and breathable. It is as tough, but it is sustainable. It's PFAS free from the, you know, from the membrane through the DWR. And, you know, like for us, we were innovating using fabrics that were air permeable, that were maybe more breathable than the old Gore-Tex. And so it was different. You know, we weren't throwing them under the bus, but as regulations change, and, you know, things happened and we needed to get PFAS out of our clothes, and that led to us not necessarily being able to use some of our old air permeable membranes, and also it led to Gore-Tex having to re-engineer their fabric. So now they're in country, but we're moving warehouses, so it's not online yet, but September 15 we released the first ever Baker Gore-Tex bib.
Ooh.
Which is gonna be pretty sick. Oh, or you can get the compound pant, which is my jam. Still has suspenders if you're bib curious. But I'm I a love my bibs, person. So. And then we have the lab coat. So yeah, the Gore-Tex rollout is going to be huge for us because I've gotten into Formula One over the last couple of years, as a lot of people have, Drive to Survive and everything. But, and when you realize that there are different, you know, like manufacturers using a Ferrari motor, you know, now all of a sudden I'm using the same motor that, that the North Face and that Arc'teryx is using and that Patagonia Pow Slayer is doing, but I'm still going to do it my way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to err on the side of durability. I have free ride cred because it's legit, you know, like we got Ross Tester, mm-hmm. you know, on the Free Ride World Tour at the pinnacle, the Free Ride World Tour still giving us feedback, and Darren Ralph's going faster than anybody else, you know, like, and he's giving us feedback besides our whole community. So now we have this tech, and it's going to be pretty amazing for us to offer that to folks.
Hell yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. I wear my bibs. Ice climbing, snowboarding, everything. Yeah. I've even worn them on my bike when, you know, we're rocking 3 feet of snow I'm still getting out hammered. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's just an all-around great product, man. And I wore mine
shrimping. I went shrimping really? On the Hood Canal. And and I needed foul weather gear, but I didn't have any.
Yeah.
And so I just threw on some Baker bibs. I mean, and this was like 10 years ago. It's nowhere near as nice as what we've been selling. But, yeah. Shrimping That's with awesome. Some waterproof boots, it worked out pretty good. I had to, like, you know, and I even still do this if you're shoveling, because like you said, Tahoe sometimes gets an exorbitant amount of snow. You take Vole straps, and I'll Vole strap my powder my powder guard onto my muck boots, onto my bogs, because otherwise, you know, like the bogs aren't as big as my Dalbellos, so then you just rope it down, they never come off, and like you are indestructible in the snow. Go snow blow.
I'll keep that in mind. Good recommendation. Okay.
I was gonna say I feel like you're gonna go home and
put on my Baker
test
bibs.
That out.
Yeah, exactly. You need the 20 inch Vole strap.
Be like, it's gonna be shipped to your house this week, and then when it's 80 degrees outside next week, you're gonna be sending me pictures.
My wife at all
running through the sprinkler.
Oh, she sees me do the goofiest shit, so wouldn't surprise her at all.
So when did you, what you mentioned, like the trail running shorts were like kind of just like a, let's see how these do, like one-off kind of thing. Is that like how like the whole mountain biking side of it started, or cause like, yeah, obviously it's a big transition
that was
from
a little more intentional. Yeah. And the trail running shorts went 2 years and we still sell them, you know, like we just are carrying over the inventory for, you know, direct. And they're really nice. It just, sometimes there's this dichotomy between flylowgear.com and the wholesale channel, mm-hmm. and the wholesale channel is still, you know, like reigns supreme. And if they don't support it, it's tough to keep it going on. So it's one of those things where we'll probably make those trail running shorts every couple of years. But to your question, when we started making, summer apparel, it was a highly debated thing between sales, marketing, and product. So mm-hmm. at that time, it was Greg, Micah, and me, and you know, two votes wins, which is great. And I think that we made it, like, Greg and I have always loved like old 70s surf style, Levi's jackets, you know, just that fusion of all that good stuff. And Micah is, you know, like, he's from Davis, California. He's a ripping surfer, fly fisherman, hunter, powder hunter, and, you know, a Sierra guy. So to him, you know, when it came to summer stuff, it was all about beach, you know, mm-hmm. like it was all about coastal. Yeah. And so we had a coastal vibe, and Greg's a trail runner. And so, and then I'm, you know, mountain biker. And so we kind of judged it, and the first short was the hot tub short, and the first shirt was the Anderson shirt, and those things we were doing like hemp blends, so there was some technical aspects to it with polyester and good stuff, and they were good shorts, and you know, but it was year two that we, you know, we had kind of launched it, got a feel for the market, and realized that we need to be authentic to who we are. And I remember this like heated discussion Greg and I had, where it's like in the winter time, Flylo was such a representation of Greg and Dan. 95% of the time we would agree. But now we had to take a departure from that, because when we were in our street clothes, you know, like, as Greg will point out, he thinks I still wear the same clothes I wore when I was a sophomore in high school, which maybe I do. I'm not going to deny that. But Greg, you know, Greg is more of a, you know, like, has a more elevated style, hipster vibes. And so we had to take a departure from that, where, you know, like, Greg will never wear a plaid Anderson shirt. Even though I'm like, dude, Black Pearl snaps, a nice plaid, like, just get me a new one every year, honey. Mm-hmm. Get me new color. And now we have, like, now we have Andersons with, like, jacquard prints on it, or, mm-hmm. you know, or we do solid. So we're broadening that stuff.
I was
going to
say, I think you have both of those.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's coming. It's coming along.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then that was authentic to our brand. And that was a hard conversation. But, you know, so far, so good. We are a, you know, like, we're a mountain lifestyle brand with a mountain bike habit, is kind of how we think about us in the summertime. And in the wintertime, we're, you know, like, we're an alpine ski snowboard brand with a backcountry habit.
Oh, yeah.
Well said.
I like
Very
it.
Very well said.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, so kind of, I mean, I guess we're right at an hour, which is, like, right around where we like to be. Last question before we kind of close out.
Because I'm not a shrink. I don't have, you know, like, you're not on the clock. Although you're my shrink, because I'm the one talking. Sorry.
I was going to say, I think I'm, am I paying you indirectly?
I don't know.
By the amount of,
I don't know, but your
flylo I have in my closet.
So smooth. We're all good.
Appreciate that. This one will be a thinker question. What does the name Flylo mean to you now versus when you started?
Ooh, that's good.
That's cool. Flylo, you know, first and foremost, it's, you know, it's the community of people that, you know, like, that take care of business, but prioritize taking care of themselves and the things that, you know, make them feel, you know, soulful and rich from that aspect, that, you know, that you're not the full dirt bag. You know, you are someone that works hard and has enough security to be able to go skiing, mm-hmm. Is going to be able to take the day off, if it's a powder day, and make that priority, is going to go on a cool ski trip every year, if not a couple. And yeah, it's a community. But the other thing that Flylo, you know, that I love about it, and maybe it's a description of our community, is, over the years, we realized that Flylo was kind of popular in Italy. I mentioned my buddy Eben Mond earlier, and Eben used to go to this Italian Telemark festival that's now turned into just a free ride festival, because they decided that Telemark was on the way out in 2007. Yeah. It was a very boring meeting. But they still Telemark a lot there. But in Italian, Flylo translates to Vola Basso. V-O-L-L-A space B-A-S-S-O, Vola Basso, which is really nice to say. Feels good. And what Flylo mean, what Vola Basso means, is take it easy, pull it back. So if someone's at the bar that's being, mm-hmm. you know, like, that's being too gregarious, or say someone's skiing in the back seat trying to keep up with you because they're not as good as you at this point in time. And that idea that, like, Vola Basso, you know, take it back. Go your own pace. Mm-hmm. Don't prove something to everybody else. Prove it to yourself. I think, like, that is a great descriptor of the Flylo community. And so we'll go with that. Vola Basso.
Beautiful.
Hell yeah.
That's a better answer than I could have imagined.
I was going to say, I don't think I could imagined that answer that good.
It's got that 9 to 5, 5 to 9 feel. Work hard, play hard.
Amen, man. Yeah. Amen.
I love it.
And, you know, like, if you figure it out and you can, you know, like, you can work 12 to 9 or 12 to 8, that means that you can be at the Loveland Ski Lift. This is, you know, like, the plan was always Loveland Ski Lift, 8:45. ski hard. And this was before Chair One and Chet's Dream. But now, like, go ski Chet's Dream for 2 hours.
Yep.
And then take phone calls from 11 o'clock back to Denver. And, like, you are skiing every day, and you are skiing a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That is the way to do it.
Yeah.
More days on snow.
Yep. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, anything else that you want to throw in there, Dan?
Nope.
Nope.
I'm an open book.
Cool.
So anytime you guys want to chat, let me know. And thanks so much for having me on your podcast. I've been a fan, and when Drew Simmons said I was coming on, I was stoked. So
appreciate that.
Awesome. Well, cool. Thanks for sitting down with us, Dan. This was a very long, sought-after interview for us.
Yes, sir.
It was really cool to just pick your brain a little bit. So thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule and hanging with us.
Definitely excited to continue to support Flylo, and obviously reading this book and you taking the time to – like you're a big brand, and you're still taking the time to come chat with us new podcasters, and
we're still whatnot, a small brand. Although my wife says I can't call us a startup anymore.
Yeah,
but you know, she definitely wrote that book.
Yeah,
and Megan, you know, like Megan's definitely the brains behind the whole operation in a lot of ways, and it's still, like I said, a family business. So, you know, to have her take it and write it from her side and represent everybody in such a way, and she's a real professional journalist, it, you know,
yeah,
it's a pretty cool piece. I'm glad you guys got to see it.
Oh yeah, that's legit for sure.
Well, Dan, you're always gonna have my purchase, I'll tell you that.
Oh yeah. All right, I'll close it out real quick and then go from there. Well, I guess, Braven, do you have anything else?
That's all for me.
Cool. All right, well, make sure that you subscribe on your favorite platform. Follow Flylo. Follow Stewards of Stoke. This will go up here in a couple of days. And then, yeah, just if you enjoyed it, drop a comment. Let us know what you think. You can get us on DMs or info@stewardsofstokemedia.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Peace out, guys.